Government Operations and Policy Committee for Wednesday, February 8th.
Thanks, man.
And members, we do have the minutes from the meeting yesterday. And Representative Bliss, have you had a chance to review the minutes for yesterday's committee meeting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bliss was excused from the last meeting, so
yes.
I think he has
Mr.
the
chair.
Motion.
Thank you. Well, then Representative Nelson, will you make that motion? That's 2 days in a row, though. I'll give you the chance to do that.
I move the minutes from February 7th.
Very good. Any additions, corrections, or deletions to the minutes? Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. The only bill we have on the agenda today is House File 600. And I will ask the bill author if he will, are you going to testify from there at the testifying table this morning, Representative Chair Garofalo?
I'll present from here, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. All right. Just a couple of things. I will move the bill before the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The bill is now before us, and Representative Garofalo, before we get started, I want to just go ahead and put down a few ground rules for people. This bill is a very popular bill in the legislature, and we do have two sides to this issue. We have those who are in favor and those who are opposed to the bill. What I'm going to do, because we are dedicating the entire committee schedule today to this bill, I'm going to allow time for both the opponents and the proponents to be able to come forward to offer testimony. What we're going to do is we're going to give each side 40 minutes this morning to be able to share their thoughts. As it stands right now, we do have a number of people who are on the list right now to testify. If you would like to testify either for or against the bill before the committee today, you are welcome to do so. What I'm going to ask that you do is our page will just catch his attention. He can take you a note, give you a piece of paper. We'll bring it up. We'll get you on the list. And if there is time that is remaining for the pro or the con on the bill, I will also ask if there's anyone else who did not get a chance to be able to sign up or to submit their name to testify to be able to testify as well. We will go 40 minutes for those who are opposed, 40 minutes for those who are in favor, or until we have received testimony from all parties, whichever comes first. So 40 minutes or till we've heard from fully from either side at this point. And then the committee will entertain amendments, and then the committee will be voting on the bill this morning before the end of committee as well. So with those as the ground rules, if you will, for the debate today, I'm going to allow each testifier 90 seconds or so. What I will do is I'll announce who is coming up and then who the next person is so that we can be efficient to be able to get everyone heard this morning. So with that, Representative Garofalo, I will turn the meeting over to you for the presentation of House File 600 that is before the Government Operations and Policies Committee. Chair Garofalo, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 600 has three main provisions to it. I'll highlight each of those. First is that in the Jobs Committee, we added appropriation language to expand the current wage theft prevention enforcement that is done at the Department of Labor and Industry. This was a priority of the Governor's Office that was included in their budget to expand the authority for that. So included in this bill is additional appropriations to hire more people to catch those bad actors, to catch the small number of employers out there who are engaging in this practice of wage theft. This is going to help us catch more of those bad guys and put those businesses on a level playing field with the others, those businesses who are following the rules. Second of all is it includes the appropriation language for the Public Employment Relations Board, the PERB Board. Candidly, members, this is something that I opposed when it was first enacted in 2014, and something that I'm against, but in the interest of compromise and cooperation, it's something that we've included. The committee unanimously agreed to improve attached to the bill to fund this. This is with regards to labor relations and appeals from workers who have grievances with state and local governments. And then third and finally, and of course, the meat of the bill is the universal uniform labor standards provisions in this bill. Quite simply, we have 854 cities in the state of Minnesota. We have 87 counties and a patchwork of labor standards that is disparate and confusing across the state makes it very difficult to do business in our state. And so by having this uniform labor standard, we can avoid this patchwork and problematic measures that are involved with that. This is the current uniform standard has been the practice of our state for over 100 years. And that's a brief synopsis of the bill. I'm happy to yield to testifiers, both proponents and opponents this time. And I think, Mr. Chairman, it might be best if I defer the questions from members until the public comment portion is completed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Graffa. We will defer to your preference on taking questions from members until after all public testimony has been heard. With the position of Representative Grofflow at the table, that actually will leave two chairs open for us. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask our first testifier to come down, and then I will announce that name, and then the second person, if you want to come down as well, and then you can sit, and then when that person is done, that you can then proceed, and I will call the next person down so that we can, again, get as much public testimony as we possibly can today and be respectful of everyone's time. The first testifier that we have, and we will go with the opposed those who are opposed to the bill this morning. And the first testifier that I have is Elizabeth Gilden from the City of Minneapolis Council Member. Then following Ms. Gilden's testimony, we'll have Patricia Newman. So if Patricia Newman would like to come forward and sit next to Ms. Gilden, we will then take your testimony at the conclusion of hers. Council Member Gilden, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Glidden, G-L-I-D-D-E-N, and I am the Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council, and we are testifying in opposition to House File 600. We understand, as Representative Garofalo stated, that the purpose for this bill is intended to avoid a so-called patchwork of policies related to workplace practices. The City of Minneapolis, I will say, has supported for many years statewide action on these issues, and these include an increase in the state minimum wage, a state safe and sick time law, paid family and medical leave, and other policies that promote health, safety, and equity in the workplace. But what we have is an absence of action at the state as well as the federal level. And this has, in fact, prompted hundreds, if not thousands, of residents in the City of Minneapolis demanding action. And this is the context in which we adopted a sick leave ordinance in 2016. Our ordinance was developed after a very lengthy process, engaging employers, workers, business and labor groups, and many others. And I will say, as a city council member, this is what I do in response to all sorts of issues that come before me on a daily basis. We found through this process that many employers have great workplace policies, but about 41% of Minneapolis workers do not have access to paid sick time. And many of these are in the service industry, compounding health impacts. We support, we value support for business, but this must be balanced with support for workers. And as a state with some of the worst disparities in the nation, we have to admit that we have not been taking care of our workers. There's a reason the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the two largest cities in the state are opposed to this bill. We are concerned about interference in doing our job as local decision makers. Please don't take away our right to elected representation at the local level. Thank you. I apologize for going over time.
My apologies to you. I mispronounced your name. It is Councilmember Glidden.
People do that all the time.
My apologies. Thank you for your testimony this morning. And before we get to Ms. Newman's testimony, the next testifier will be Ms. Ann Finn. So if she would like to make her way to the testifying table as well as we queue up our next testifier. Ms. Newman, welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, an association representing 90 cities in the 7-county metropolitan area. Metro Cities is respectfully opposing House File 600. Our policies do support local control and decision-making authority and believe that locally elected officials are in the best position to respond to a community's needs and should be allowed to make appropriate local decisions. Metro City's policies do overall oppose statutory or other policy restrictions that would impede the ability of local officials to act and protect the best interests of their community. In supporting this local decision-making authority, Metro City's policies do recognize that what works for one community may not work for another, and therefore a flexibility that allows local officials to respond to the needs and circumstances of their communities must be maintained. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman, for your testimony. Before Ms. Finn begins, the next testifier will be Dr. Stefan Tomrinke, if you would come forward, sir. Ms. Finn, welcome to the committee. If you'll go ahead and speak
Thank
your name
you,
for the
Chair,
record and proceed.
Members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We are a statewide association representing 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities. I'll note that we did distribute a letter to the committee, so I'm not going to spend too much time here because our full position is outlined there. The bill we respectfully oppose because it is in conflict with the League's long-held core value that local elected decision-makers are in the best position to determine what health, safety, and welfare regulations best serve their constituents. And I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Finn, for your testimony. Again, before we get to Dr. Tomrinke, Dr. Tomrinke, what I will do is, again, some of you maybe joined us as we started. We're starting with those who are opposed. If you would like to testify before the committee, please identify yourself to one of the pages, give them your name, and we will get you on the list. And if you'd like to testify for, we are going to take those folks after, and they will be the next folks who will be coming forward to testify as well. The next testifier after Dr. Tomrinke is going to be Tom Marver. Are you Mr. Marver? Very good. Doctor, proceed, state your name for the record, and then provide us with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, Dr. Stefan Pomrinke, it's with a P. I have an MD, I have a Master's in Public Health, and I have a Master's of Arts in Theological Studies. Grace to you and peace to you. I'm a family physician. I live on the east side of St. Paul. I'm represented by Sheldon Johnston. I give direct patient care at a federally qualified health center near my house. Many are uninsured and underinsured. On a near daily basis, I see people directly affected by not having access to earned safe and sick time. Just this morning, about an hour and a half ago, I saw a patient that was directly affected by not having earned sick time. They had an issue, and they came in a delayed matter, in a delayed manner for a matter that is now potentially complicated. So, again, on a nearly daily basis, I see many people of color, many that work in the food sector, many delay coming in for 3 or 4 days with a contagious issue, and they keep on working because they don't have the option. I was impressed by the Minnesota Department of Health's white paper on paid leave and health. I think their statistics are compelling, but again, this is a thing for one-on-one individuals, that this affects real people on a daily basis. And I represented Isaiah on the Earn Safe and Sick Time Task Force for St. Paul, and it was a huge discussion over the course of many weeks, and this measure takes away the power of people speaking up their voices and actually wanting things that they experience on a daily basis. Thank you.
Doctor, thank you for your testimony. My apologies. They did have an R instead of a P in your name, so I mispronounced it. My apologies. Before Mr. Marver begins to testify, I have Sarah James on the list as well. Sarah James, if you'd like to make your way to the testifying table. Mr. Marver, welcome to the committee. If you'll go ahead and state your name and pursue your testimony, sir.
And Chair members, my name is Tom Marver, and I'm a board member of JCA, and I'm representing JCA here today. Jewish Community Action's mission is to bring together Jewish people from diverse traditions and perspectives to promote understanding and take action on racial and economic issues in Minnesota. Founded in 1995, Jewish Community Action organizes Jewish Minnesotans to act together for social change. We engage our community and bring a distinctly Jewish voice to fight for justice. JCA was privileged to have members on both the Minneapolis and the St. Paul Earn Sick and Safe Time Task Forces. This bill negates all of the time and effort our members invested in these task forces. This preemption bill is an attack on workers who have recently made progress. JCA opposes the passage of House File 600. Thank you.
Mr. Marver, thank you for your testimony. And Ms. James, before you begin, I have Arlene Datu, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Thank you, ma'am. Ms. James, if you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Sarah James. I'm a resident of House District 63A. Chairperson O'Driscoll and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you. I appreciate your time and energy serving our legislature and compiling citizen input on laws important to their interests and the future of the state. Many people will provide testimony on the human and public health side of this issue, and I'm aligned with their perspectives. However, I would like to respond to a common theme brought forward by the interests that are in favor of this law. I've been a technology professional for more than 15 years in various industries. As we all know, technology and our uses of it are increasing in power and complexity at exponential rates. Yet a large part of the testimony you hear in support of this law says that companies simply couldn't sustain the administration of many different city ordinances related to workers. Representatives, this is disingenuous. The fact is, municipalities around Minnesota already vary substantially in ordinances and tax code that support businesses. No one would argue that they must continue to do so to retain the competitive edge that has made Minnesota a great place to live and work. For example, in Minneapolis, as you know, businesses administratively accommodated the U.S. Bank Stadium tax to encourage growth in the city. Beyond taxes, each municipality determines zoning regulations based on the particular layout and needs of the township, including fees and expenses for zoning changes and exceptions. Workforce policies are no different. Any of you who participated in the University of Minnesota budget process will find a comparison between the U of M and municipalities a fair one. I was part of the rollout of software system at the U that provides record keeping for more than 2 million past and present students, along with all HR and financial functions of the university, including myriad employee classifications, contracts, and requirements based on student grant specifications, budget years, and negotiations and professional and union bodies, among other things. Based on this experience alone, I find highly suspect any claims that there are not administrative tools that would easily handle the volume and complexity at issue here. There are products out there today that handle this and other complexities, and new products every day. And to end on a light note, as some in this room will know, there is nothing quite so powerful as a computer geek on a mission. Thank you for your time.
Ms. James, thank you for your testimony. Before we hear from Ms. Datu, Bill McCarthy is the next person, if you'd like to come down and get on deck. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Arlene Datu. I am a leader with Isaiah and the mother of three adult children who are all college educated and living here in St. Paul. I was jubilant when the St. Paul City Council voted unanimously on a sick and safe time ordinance for our city. I and many of my colleagues in Isaiah had worked long and hard with our city council and our community to make sure that we could get earned sick and safe time for the 72,000 workers who currently do without. That includes my sons, my daughter, and my daughter-in-law. But now it appears that corporate special interests are trying to undo all the good we have done for our city and the people in our community with the introduction of this House File 600 that would nullify paid sick time. My children and grandchild will suffer if this bill is allowed to move forward. Two of them hold down jobs here in the city where they receive no benefits, including no paid sick time. My daughter works at a restaurant here in the city and has had to go to work sick because she needs the money to pay her rent, utilities, and groceries. She can't afford to miss any hours. My daughter-in-law works in St. Paul and gave birth to a baby boy just last year. She had to take her son, my grandson, to the emergency room for care one evening when he was running a high temperature and continuously vomiting, only because she couldn't take time off during the day to take him to a doctor. That is not right. Good, hardworking people should be able to stay home when they are sick or have a medical issue, and not have to worry about if they will have the money to pay their bills. As a person of faith, I believe we all need to be treated with dignity and respect. as we are all made in God's image and likeness. There's no sense of dignity or respect toward us as human beings when a person has to drag himself to work sick or send a child to school sick because they have no other recourse. This is an untenable choice. I urge this committee to vote against this bill. Vote instead for families and local communities and local public officials who can make the best decisions about the welfare of our communities and not the large corporate interests.
You are over your time, and I've been generous to wait for you to make your final statement here.
Fine. And not the large corporate interests whose focus is solely profits and the bottom line. Vote for the good of all our families and our children by not letting this bill go forward. Thank you so much, Chairman, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you for being with us today. Before Mr. McCarthy testifies, I will ask that Mr. Frank Brown come forward. Mr. Brown. Mr. McCarthy, welcome to the committee. If you will state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Bill McCarthy. I'm president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the Labor Federation, representing our state's unions. We are educators, nurses, firefighters, building trades, public employees, industrial, retail, service workers who make a difference in our communities every day. We are Minnesota's labor movement, and we stand united in support of local democracy and in opposition to House File 600. The committee has a clear choice today that will impact local communities, local families, and all working Minnesotans. If enacted, this bill would immediately deny paid sick days to more than 150,000 working Minnesotans. It would stop residents, businesses, and their locally elected officials from deciding where they should improve conditions for people who work in their communities. And it would send a message to Minnesotans that local democracy doesn't matter. Mr. Chair, committee members, there was talk in the previous committee about so-called right-to-work ordinances on the local level. Make no mistake, the labor movement sees that kind of talk for what it really is, an attempt to distract and divide. Well, it won't work. It won't work because the labor movement's support for local control is not just about us as union members. We are committed to protecting local democracy to benefit all working people. And no matter how much window dressing you try to add, there's no eliminating the fact that this bill would stop communities from improving working conditions. I strongly urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Ms. McCarthy, thank you this morning for being with us. Mr. Brown, before I have you begin, the next person who I'd like to have come up and get ready would be Mr. Dan Swenson-Klatt. Very good. Mr. Brown, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Frank Brown. I'm the owner of Minuteman Press in Uptown. And I used to work for a large printing company in one of the suburbs, and there was this lady there that had worked for 23 years. She was the lead in the press room department. She was training new men to work in the department and run the presses, but they were paying her less than they were paying the new people that were being hired. And this was against my values. So I decided to open up my own printing shop in Minneapolis. And I lived my values through my print shop. And I worked hard along with other small businesses to get earned sick and safe time pass for our community. I think it's important for us to know that small businesses really give back to the community. We're not trying to extract from the community. We're trying to give to the community. And that's why we worked hard in St. Paul and Minneapolis to get sick and safe time pass. I went to a Jesuit school to get my MBA, and they taught me to maximize my wealth in an ethical manner. And I do that constantly, and so do other small businesses. Large corporations have seemed to lost track in an ethical manner. And I think circumventing local government by bringing this to the state because they could not stop what we were doing, doing our businesses in an ethical manner, is wrong. So I urge you guys to vote against this bill, or at least abstain.
Mr. Brown, thank you for your testimony and being with us here this morning. The next testifier, Chris Conrad. Mr. Swenson-Klatt, if you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Daniel Swenson-Klatt. I'm a small business owner. I'm also the operator of Butter Bakery Cafe and get to represent you as Minnesota's state biscuit. Sourcing butter from Hope, Minnesota, flour from Swanee Mill and Freeport, buttermilk from the Hastings Creamery, eggs from Cocado. I enjoy this rich patchwork of communities across this state who makes us who we are. It was my intention to present logical reasons why this bill presented to you is good for small businesses and actually was written for big businesses instead. The truth is kind of tough to get across, so I decided to ask someone else to speak for me today.
I have one issue with this bill. It does not go far enough to crush the rebellion. In order to remove the complexity and patchwork, we must change the name. The Empire demands the new bill shall be named the Uniform Galactic Labor Standards. There will be no rebellion anywhere. We must crush it. You cannot defeat the power of the dark side. There is no hope.
Wait, hope? Did someone say hope? There is hope. It's a little town in Minnesota,
sir,
one of the last creameries.
Sir,
and it is
over your time here, so I'll ask you to go ahead and finish your final statement.
Thank you, sir.
The next testifier after Mr. Connery will be Katie DeRose, if I've got that name correctly. Mr. Connery, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Chris Connery. I'm here for Take Action Minnesota. Chairman O'Driscoll, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to offer my time to one of our members, Ms. Michelle DeZiel, who's here to speak on behalf of us.
If you would like to identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, hi, my name is Michelle DeZiel, and I live in Lake Elmo, Minnesota, and I'm here to say vote no to this bill. I spoke at the Senate hearing on Monday. Now I'm speaking to you. I am an African-American woman, and I'm very upset with how you are trying to get rid of paid sick time. When my son was 3 years old, he had an asthma attack. Fortunately, as a teacher of color, I had paid sick time. Now you want to take that away. Your actions say to me that you care more about corporate interests, and you'll kick people of color, women, business owners, and local officials to the curb. If you care about Minnesotans, you'll vote no to this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being with us today. And Katie DeRose, very good. And then Reverend Grant Stevenson will be our next testifier, if you'd like to come forward at this time as well. Welcome to the committee. You'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Katie Drejos, and I'm here representing NOC, Neighborhoods Organizing for Change. I've been a retail worker for 8 years, and I'm strongly against House File 600. My whole entire working life, I've been stuck with inconsistent scheduling, on and off healthcare, and absolutely zero work-life balance. I have no sick time. For me personally, this has affected my life. At the age of 24, I got shingles, and I was out of work for 3 weeks. I had only accrued 3 days of PTO, even though working for the company for almost a year. And to add insult to injury, I lost my health care because I was out of work for 3 weeks. This should be illegal. One of my coworkers who was employed at 40 hours a week has now been cut to 1 day and has to go on unemployment because of it. So to reiterate, she is now becoming a ward of the state because a corporation doesn't want to hold up their end of the bargain. By supporting this bill, you either think that locally elected officials don't possess the experience and common sense to be able to craft initiatives that will be in everyone's best interest, or you care more about corporate interests than you do the will of the people. I'll leave you with this. I was here last Thursday, and the one thing that stood out to me the most was who was in favor of this bill and who was against it. It's blindingly obvious that this is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. This is a corporate interest versus the working class. And I would like to remind everyone in this room who pays your wage and who hires you. It's me, it's my coworkers, and it's my friends. And you can count on the fact that if this bill passes, we won't forget, and when it's your performance review, you will fail. So please do not pass House File 600. My future and your future depends on it.
Thank you for being with us this morning. Before Reverend Stevenson proceeds with his testimony, our next testifier will be Sanjeev Mishra, if I'm pronouncing that correct. Ask you to come up and be ready. Reverend Stevenson, go identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grant Stevenson. I've been a Lutheran pastor for 25 years, the last 16 of it here in the city of St. Paul. I speak against this bill, House File 600, which is written by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and is part of a nationwide ALEC strategy to disempower workers. It is nothing less than a corporate power grab. Now, you're going to hear testimony when we're finished speaking against the bill today about the problems with a patchwork of laws, that it's better to have a uniform statewide labor laws. But there is nothing virtuous about uniform laws if they're uniformly bad. And this push by the Minnesota Chamber is completely disingenuous because it is opposite the argument that they themselves will make whenever there's an effort here in the State House to raise the minimum wage of the state of Minnesota. Then they will come and they will say, oh, no, Mr. Chairman, Greater Minnesota cannot possibly have the same minimum wage as the metropolitan area. We're going to have a patchwork of minimum wages. We need different rates. This law is about disempowering communities who want to do better. Mr. Chairman, when communities reach high, we should not be a state that knocks them back down and who do not believe in corporate Minnesotans' race to the bottom. We're not a state who believe in corporate Minnesotans' race to the bottom of worker benefits. The vast majority of Minnesota cities, hundreds of cities, 833 out of 853, are opposed to this. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce doesn't represent the people of Minnesota. You do. I've been at these hearings a long time, and I hear person after person talk about the needs of their families and of their children. I speak opposed to this bill because I have not heard one person from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce say anything other than it's inconvenient.
Thank you for being with us today. The next person that I have before we go to Mr. Mishra's testimony that I'm going to ask to come forward is Gail Sorensen. Mr. Mishra, welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Sanjeev Mishra. I'm a leader with NOC and a resident of Minneapolis. I had the opportunity of attending the first committee hearing for this bill last week. Many of those who testified in opposition to this bill had to miss work or leave their families in order to be there and point out to you, our representatives, the costs associated with living in poverty and not being able to take care of their families. Their experiences fell on deaf ears. In support of the bill, we saw dozens of corporate representatives regurgitate talking points and bemoan the comparatively small headache of navigating a patchwork of rules and regulations that seek to improve the working condition, the conditions of workers in Minnesota. At the conclusion of this meeting, Representative Grafflow, right there, the author of the bill, made a point of admiring the civic engagement of those who attended the meeting and their passionate testimonies. However, he then proceeded to chide those in attendance for their cheers and applause when a statement in opposition to the bill was made, citing the attendees' lack of respect for the legislative body of this state. This may come as a surprise to you, but respect needs to be earned. Ask yourself, what respect do the working families in Minnesota owe to a body that has casually dismissed the voices of those who are most affected by policies that exploit workers? What respect do we owe to a legislature that has done the bidding of the American Legislative Exchange Council, which Representative Grafflow is the state chair of, funnily enough, while the needs and struggles of those who are having to choose between losing a paycheck and sending their sick child to school go unanswered? The workers of the Twin Cities have made it clear that if the state of Minnesota refuses to make improvements to our labor conditions, we will take matters into our own hands. We are all learning quite quickly which of you have an interest in the safety and security of the American worker and which of you instead serve to enlarge the bottom lines of the corporate voices, which for far too long have been amplified in the chambers of this very building. This bill is nothing more than an attempt to roll back the meager improvements Twin Cities workers have made to their work conditions. We all see what's going on here, and we remember how you act today. Those of us in opposition to it, they'll have one simple question for you. Who do you serve?
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Sorensen, before we ask you to provide your testimony, the next person I have on the list is Michelle Diesel. Very good. And then Jeffrey Benny will be next. So if you want to queue up, great. Ms. Sorensen, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Gay Sorensen. I'm a member of ISAIAH, one of the groups that's worked for almost 2 years to get the ordinance passed in St. Paul for a sick time. I care very much about protecting the ordinance for earned sick and safe time because of my adult son and all the other low-wage workers that we've taken advantage of for so long. My son has worked at a large retail store for over 5 years and has never had paid sick days. He tries not to miss work when he's sick because he'll lose pay and he may get in trouble with the store manager. So he often goes to work when he's sick or goes back to work before he's on the mend. When working sick day after day, an illness that would usually last several days can end up lasting several weeks as complications set in. I feel angry that businesses are making money on the backs of sick employees and that you are bringing a bill forward that would allow corporations to treat St. Paul workers this way. It's not right that people should have to choose between getting better and getting by. We look to you, the state legislature, to serve the common good and uphold our democracy. Thank you.
Ms. Sorensen, thank you for your testimony today. And Mr. Benny, before we get to your testimony, Obi Ballinger will be our next testifier. Welcome to the committee, sir. State your name for the record and sure. Proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Jeffrey Benny. I live in St. Louis Park. Thank you, honorable members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak on this important issue. I'm here to speak against House File 600. For 49 years, my family and I owned and operated a small manufacturing company. Over the years, we were located in Minneapolis, Columbia Heights, Cambridge, and Isanti. Through the years, our company had a family of employees that ranged from 5 to 35 employees. I say family because that's what, in many ways, that's what we were. In each location, I paid my employees at wage rates higher than the minimum wage. Over our 49 years, we allowed our employees time off to tend to their family and health issues and other issues. In enacting House File 600, we would be telling the cities and counties in Minnesota that you know better than they do on how to govern themselves. We would be telling the residents of your various constituencies that you, who spend a significant amount of time here in St. Paul, are smarter than they are in governing their own city. The governments in those cities were elected to represent their citizens. They should be allowed to do that. The state should not preempt the will of the people when they elected their local governments. Sometimes leaders of our government and business leaders need to be pushed to do the right thing. I'm sure most of us in the room are too young to remember the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I do know that President Johnson had to drag members of his administration kicking and screaming to pass this law. He had to drag them into doing what is right. Likewise, opposing House File 600 and letting the local cities and counties do what they were elected to do is the right thing to do. For these reasons, and I have noted, and many others, I urge you to take the moral action, the right action, and vote against House File 600.
Thank you. Mr. Benny, thank you for being with us here this morning. Before Mr. Ballinger proceeds with his testimony, our next testifier after him will be Manolyn Howell, if I've got that correct. And Mr. Ballinger, welcome to the committee. If I'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Obi Ballinger. I serve as pastor of Edina Morningside Community Church in the Morningside neighborhood of Edina. And I'm also a clergy leader with Isaiah, working on behalf of the poor, the sick, children, the elderly, and others whom Jesus called the least of these. Last year, with leadership of many faith communities and my own participation, Minneapolis and St. Paul passed labor standards that offered these earned sick and safe time workplace standards for 150,000 more workers in Minnesota, most of whom are poor, are women, or are people of color. But now professional lobbyists, which you're going to hear from in a few minutes, are paid to be here, and they've shopped around this out-of-state preemption bill. They want you to believe that this is about creating a consistent standard across Minnesota, avoiding a patchwork of regulations. If that's really what this is about, the solution is simple. Make the St. Paul Sick Time Ordinance a model for statewide legislation that protects the most vulnerable. Anything less than that fails to do what Jesus does repeatedly, heals everyone, no matter who they are, and cares for the health of the whole community instead of the moneyed elite. I call on you now to exercise moral leadership, befitting your status as representatives of the least of these. Stop this attack on local democracy, or if you're serious about one state, one rule, pass earned sick and safe time for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today.
Would you, Manila Ndichinkas,
Hello, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Manila Huel. I am a current resident of Minneapolis, but a recent transplant from Duluth, Minnesota, a city that is currently have a task force that is working on an earned sick and safe time policy because it is what our city needs. I was actually really honored to be able to testify in front of my city council on the need for an earned sick and safe time committee to talk about the very real ramifications for the indigenous people of our city. Indigenous people often have disparities because of generations of oppression from the government. Now, Native governments have the privilege of being able to set up policies and programs to help our people. That is exactly what cities across Minnesota are trying to do. They are trying to hear the voices of their constituents, the people who live in their community, the very diverse communities that make up Minneapolis, St. Paul, Wilmer, Morris, Minnesota, where I went to college, and Duluth. All over the city and states, we have diverse communities that have very diverse needs, and our state has very real issues with taking note of that diversity. And we need to have those diverse tables come together to push our local electeds, like our council members and our county commissioners, forward to have more equitable policies directly impacting the communities that are there. And that is why I stand opposed to House File 600.
Mr. Hawley, thank you for your testimony today. The final testifier that I have on, who has identified themselves as interested in speaking against, is Danielle Christensen. Ask her to come forward at this time. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you would state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Danielle Whitella Christensen. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. I am a resident of the city of Minneapolis. And I would like to say I am very much opposed to House File 600. I think that we should very much encourage local governments to make whatever ordinances they see fit to represent their citizens. I would think that at a state level you could respect the progressive ideas of larger cities in driving our whole state forward and acknowledging that serving the people in our larger communities is doing the state a great favor. They're setting the bar high and allowing other municipalities to look up and acknowledge the benefit to those cities. For sure, there's confusion. We were talking, this House file is in regards to labor standards. You guys know, right? So sales tax, other laws, ordinances, they're all different no matter where you are, and we should not expect that labor ordinances should be uniform just because that's convenient. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. We do have about 3 minutes left. As I said, it was going to go with 40 minutes for each side until we ran out of testifiers. And I do have time if there's someone who did not get on the list who is opposed who would like to speak. Sir, come on down. I've got, again, room for one more person within that 40-minute time frame if someone is interested. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee. If you'll state your name for the record and your testimony.
Roger Grusing, GRU, two S's, ING. Appreciate your role. My father sat in your chairs for 14 years, and I wrote his campaign literature. He caucused conservative. And that was my heritage. I appeal to you on the basis of the conservative values of respect for individuals and for local decision-making to turn this bill down. I have spent my career as a pastor. So much of my time was enabling people who were in the squeeze, often accelerated by health problems, to be able to keep on working, keep on putting food on the table. These are real people. I have dealt with them, cried with them, thousands of them for the years in which I've worked. Please consider the conservative values of supporting functioning individuals. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us this morning, sir. Is there anyone else from the public who has not had a chance to sign up that would like to testify again? I've got time for maybe one more person. Seeing none and hearing none, that will conclude. Oh, please, ma'am, come forward. You'll be our final testifier this morning. Didn't see you back there. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Contra A. Devon, and I am a resident of St. Paul. I testified in Minneapolis about the need for paid sick time at a city council meeting. The reason why I want to speak today is because with things like the $15 minimum wage, the needs for labor standards in Minneapolis and St. Paul are far different than the needs for somebody in rural Minnesota, just based off of, like, income. Like, those things that we have that we need to set standards for is different, and we can't expect the state to be able to set standards that represent everybody fairly and equally based off of those different expectations. The needs of Minnesotans all across the state for paid sick time is necessary. I myself have had to work in retail handling people's food while I'm sick because Walmart would not allow people to have policy where they can take sick time without getting reprimanded for having done so. Handling your food, putting you at risk for getting sick because you can't afford to take a day off. And I cannot see, as you're supposed to represent all of us, that you would not expect there to be standards locally and across the state based off of the needs of its citizens. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, and appreciate you being here this morning. That concludes the time and testifiers for those who are opposed, and we have a like list of people who are interested in testifying for the bill. And again, if you have not identified yourself as someone who wants to speak in favor of the bill, please let one of the pages know, and they will get your name on the list with us here. And if time permits, we will again, just like we did with those who are opposed, once again throw it open to those who might not have been on the list or have arrived a little bit late to the committee. With that, I will ask Mr. Cam Winton to come forward as our first testifier for those who are in favor of the bill. And again, we're going to observe the 90-second rule, but we do have not quite as many testifiers on the floor side. So, again, if people are identifying themselves and wanting to speak, we will go ahead and get you on the list. We might be a little bit more generous because we said 40 minutes for each side. But, again, I will continue to watch the list and making sure that folks get their fair hearing this morning. So, Mr. Winton, welcome to the committee this morning. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Cam Winton. I'm with the member of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Now, I am the testifier that has to follow a handful of ministers. And let me share with you then my favorite quote on these topics. We can ask God's blessing and God's help, but here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. It was President Kennedy who said that. And when I think of how we do God's work here on earth, how we address the needs of the least of these, the best way that our society has figured out to advance everyone's interests and to help everyone thrive is through regulated enterprise, through a regulated market. There's always room for improvement, but if we look at the results of regulated capitalism here in Minnesota, there's a lot of cause for celebration. Right now today, our unemployment rate in Minnesota is 3.9%. That's lower than the nationwide average. In the Twin Cities, that unemployment rate is even lower. When we look at wage growth, it's the highest it's been in 8 years. That's a good thing for workers. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is proud to play a role in advancing conditions for that kind of thriving. We are comprised of 2,300 companies. You've heard talk today about how it's all big business. Certainly, some of our members are large, but in fact, only 5% of our members have 1,000 or more employees. Fully 60% of the members in the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce
have between 1 and 50 employees. We have been around since 1913, and we're proud to do our part to make Minnesota ready for the future. We encourage your support for House File 600 without amendment to make sure that Minnesota's employers can play by uniform rules across the state instead of having to devote limited time and resources to the serious burdens of complying with a patchwork of laws across our state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. And I should have let Adam Hansen know that he was going to be next. So I'm going to ask Adam Hansen to come down, and then I'm going to ask Jamie Apool to be on deck this morning. Mr. Hansen, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony this morning.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Adam Hansen. I'm here representing the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. ABC represents over 300 merit shop, open shop construction companies who employ over 22,000 high-quality, multi-skilled craft professionals. These contractors and their men and women that they employ are part of the 70% of the construction craft professionals in the state that choose not to belong to a union. Our contractor members throughout the state pay their employees competitively, fairly, based on merit, job performance, and experience. They also offer competitive benefit packages that match the need of an ever-changing and in-demand workforce. ABC supports House File 600. Contractors and their craft professionals throughout the state are already used to working with statewide laws, codes, and regulations. The Department of Labor and Industry oversees statewide construction codes and licensing laws, statewide occupational safety and health standards, statewide apprenticeship standards, statewide workers' compensation laws, and yes, even statewide wage and hour laws. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul are mandating a one-size-fits-all benefit package that construction companies either have to abide by or pay prevailing wage rates on private market rate work. This power grab by cities is breathtaking and unprecedented. What we are seeing today are cities making illegal that which state law explicitly allows. Employers and contractors providing flexible benefits and paying market rate wages on private construction projects. Passing House File 600 would ensure that contractors throughout the state and their employees who build Minnesota can continue to work and bid competitively, follow one set of statewide codes, rules, and laws, all while working to provide flexible and innovative and competitive wages and benefit packages. Thank you.
Mr. Hansen, thank you for your testimony. And following Ms. Poole will be Vicki Stute, or Stutt. Very good. Ms. Poole, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. I am Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 600. The MGA is a state trade association representing the retail food industry. We're one of the oldest state trade associations, and we're celebrating our 120th year this year, representing consumers, careers, and community. We have over 300 members with nearly 1,200 locations statewide. Our members include grocers, convenience stores, wholesalers, manufacturers, and anyone that supports the industry. Our member companies employ both union and non-union Minnesotans, and we provide about one out of every 20 jobs in the state. We have a very unique culture with hundreds of grocers and convenience, many of who are independent and multi-generationally locally owned. We are also home to an abundant array of food manufacturers, wholesalers, and distributors. They are responsible for the movement of food from farm to fork. This is a highly complex, interconnected framework of commerce. They all create jobs, support local charities, and work diligently to provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. As a point of reference, the retail food industry typically operates on a profit margin of about 1.5%. As a community employer, we value our employees and know how important they are to industry's day-to-day success. We are a customer service industry. Wellness, attitude, respect, and relationships are key to our viability. Our member companies proudly offer a wide range of benefits to meet the needs of the workforce and the very competitive nature of the job marketplace. They offer competitive wages, paid time off. Many provide health care, 401ks, pensions, profit sharing. This is an incredibly important to note that in no way does House File 600 prevent, take away, reduce wages, benefits a private employer provides its employees. We have many member companies with locations in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth that are union shops. They work with their local unions through contract negotiations to buy the best possible package for each contract. These contracts are negotiated in good faith. Business plans and workforce decisions are made based on these collective agreements. These collective agreements have not been considered in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and there are many unintended consequences. With that, we ask that you support this bipartisan legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Schutte?
Studi,
sorry. And then we'll have Ms. Deb McMillan coming next. If Ms. McMillan is here, ask her to proceed down as well. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Vicki Studi. I am the president of the Dakota County Regional Chamber of Commerce, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, Chairman, and the members of the committee. As a multi-community, local, and regional chamber of commerce representing more than 500 members throughout Dakota County, we fully support passage of House File 600. This morning, I am also here to speak on behalf of the Metropolitan Advocacy Coalition of Chambers as chair of their board, a group of 20-plus local chambers from throughout the Twin Cities marketplace with a combined membership of more than 10,000 businesses. Our members are employers who hire thousands of people from across the region, purchase goods and services from companies in the area, and work in collaboration to ensure our regional economy remains strong and vibrant. Metropolitan Advocacy Coalition was formed to provide a collective voice on this type of issue. Over the past 60 days, we have been analyzing data from an online survey that more than 500 of our members participated in. 75% of those members are small businesses. As you will see from the results, concerns about local regulations, paid sick and safe leave, is not about big business. It's about every business in the Twin Cities region and the state of Minnesota. According to the survey respondents, businesses believe that increased workforce regulations and minimum wage increases at a city level have negative consequences to their business. 70% believe in that negative consequence, and more than 80% support uniform statewide labor standards. As a regional economy, we are interconnected in a way that helps make this a great place to start and grow a business. We have an amazingly skilled workforce who is incredibly important to each company and the region's ability to grow. Our member employers know this and do all they can to attract and retain employees with generous benefit packages that best meet their business's needs. We ask for your support and passage of House File 600. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your time this morning. Ms. McMillan, before we have you testify, Mr. Steve Rush will be our next testifier. Ms. McMillan, welcome to the committee. If you'll proceed with your testimony after identifying yourself.
Good morning. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here today in support of House File 600. I represent more than 700 members with more than 55,000 employees in the West Metro area. Businesses move commerce across a region, through a state, and even globally without regard to which zip code they are located in or moving through. Statewide Uniform Labor Standards provides a structure of predictable, straightforward business regulation and reduces competitive disadvantages within the marketplace. I urge your support of House File 600 and encourage you to join with 22 other states that support statewide uniformity of labor regulation. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ms. McMillan. And Mr. Rush, before you begin, Mr. Brian Carr will be the testifier after you. Mr. Rush, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Rush. I'm Director of Government Relations for Holiday Companies. We are a family-owned Bloomington-based convenience store company, and next year we will celebrate our 90th year of doing business. I'm also an employment attorney for Holiday, and there are a number of concerns that my company and I have with local employer mandates. Compliance with some of the ordinances passed or contemplated is extremely difficult. For paid sick and safe leave, much concern has been expressed about counting the time of an employee that is not based working in a city, but occasionally spends time there. Holiday has petroleum drivers, bakery drivers, IT professionals, me, and others who spend intermittent amounts of time in various cities, and it would be very difficult to accurately keep track of that time. The enforcement process could be very expensive for businesses. One of the paid sick and safe leave ordinances provides for a private right of action and an award of attorney's fees to a successful plaintiff. It is inevitable that innocent mistakes will be made, and yet businesses will have to pay for significant attorney's fees for those mistakes. I do not take lightly this step to restrict cities in considering ways in which to improve local communities. However, there is a significant potential that our cities will inadvertently create a bad business environment that will only ultimately harm the residents they seek to protect. Therefore, we support House File 600. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. And, Mr. Carr, before you begin, I'm going to ask Ms. Jill Larson to come down and be the next testifier. Mr. Carr, welcome to the committee and invite you to share your testimony after you give your name for the record, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Carr. I'm the Government Relations Director and Legal Counsel at the Minnesota Retailers Association. It is my honor to represent great retailers across this state, from small Main Street businesses to medium-sized retailers with multiple locations to national retailers. Retailers across Minnesota have expressed concern over the patchwork of local ordinances that have passed recently and are being considered. Small Main Street and medium-sized retailers, in particular members, say that they will be greatly impacted by the new significant increase in their administrative duty to comply with local labor laws. In addition, already complying with state and federal laws, Minnesota's retailers will be required to devote even more resources into complying with local law, which we've already seen lacks parity among the cities that have passed it. The extrapolation of these inconsistent ordinances could lead to 854 different laws across the state, 87 counties, which could all have different local labor laws as well, all of which Minnesota retailers, who are already operating on thin profit margins in an internationally competitive retail market, would have to comply with. And if it's not 854 local labor laws, let's say it's just a fraction of that, that would still be extremely difficult for small and medium-sized retailers who have less sophisticated operations. Members, retailers across Minnesota appreciate consistent, predictable, and uniform state labor standards, as they allow our retailers to do what our retailers love to do best, which is invest in their communities, invest in their employees, and sell great products at competitive prices to consumers, as opposed to losing those growth opportunities and those investments to another layer of compliance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carr, thank you for your testimony. Jill Larson, then we'll have Mr. Tom Hackbarth on deck. Ms. Larson, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Jill Larson. I'm with the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are an organization that includes about 120 of Minnesota's largest employers. Most of those employers are headquartered here in Minnesota. Most of our members already provide generous benefits to their employees, very competitive wages and benefits. We do that, of course, to attract and retain talent, especially in this time of a growing labor shortage. However, this growing trend of local workplace mandates does make it more difficult and more costly for our members to operate here in Minnesota, especially since these local mandates that have passed, they don't recognize existing employee benefit plans and deem them in compliance with the local ordinances, even if they may be more generous. And so these employers, even though they may be providing the benefit, are required to go through all of the record keeping and paperwork and again, these ordinances are oftentimes not consistent with each other, so it does make it more difficult. And so for our folks who have multiple employees in multiple locations, it is a human resources challenge, even for those of us that have sophisticated HR systems. So we appreciate you hearing the bill and ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Mr. Hackbarth, you would go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Before I do that, Tony Chesek is the next testifier. Mr. Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Tom Hackbarth. I represent the Bowling Proprietors Association of Minnesota. We're a group of over 130 members of people that own bowling alleys across the state of Minnesota. You heard a lot today about this is a corporate bill, it's a big business bill, et cetera, but our 130 members are small family-owned businesses across the state, many of which are located in the Twin Cities metropolitan area and in Minneapolis. And we do support House File 600, and I just want to make it very, very clear. It was touched on a little bit, but this bill does not take away the ability for businesses to negotiate with their employees for higher wages and for better benefits, and a lot of those businesses do provide those at this time. So I would recommend to vote in favor of House File 600 and without any amendments. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And Mr. Tisak is going to end the last person that I have on the pre-signed list for pro. Again, if there are individuals who would like to, we'll get to you after this to speak in favor of who did not get a chance to get on the list. So if you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Chesnick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the MLBA. The MLBA is consisted of small operators, small business owners. The association has been around since about 1952 and has been representing small business owners during that period of time. These bars and restaurants and liquor stores are at their best. Public houses, places to gather, relax, and create community. I'm here today to represent the many members of the MLBA and their position on House File 600. Supporting House File 600, I come here to do that and to tell you that without this bill, there are significant negative impacts to small businesses. In the 159 years the state has existed, small business owners have been able to rely on wage and labor practices to be set at the state level. This has provided certainty and uniformity that has been proven to be quite reliable. We have not had to deal with different labor rules city by city or township by township. This recent break from tradition is the first step in the creation of a patchwork of labor rules and potential different levels of wages depending upon where these businesses are located. This also is an increase of competitive disadvantages within the hospitality marketplace. Next, somebody might ask, what impact does this have on a bar, restaurant, or liquor store in my district? I will tell you that the cost of goods go up because the distributor is based in the city that chooses to impose their own unique wage and labor standards. That cost of goods will be passed on to the bar, restaurant, and or liquor store, and in turn passed on to the consumer. We live in an integrated state where products are supplied from all parts of the state to small business owners. I want to conclude where I began. The members of the MLBA are oftentimes the most identifiable small businesses in your communities. We value our communities. We value our employees. We just think that setting wage and labor standards city by city does not make sense. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Again, is there anyone who would like to speak for or in favor of House File 600? As we did with those who are opposed, we do have a little bit of time left. Seeing none and hearing none, I'm going to close the public testimony part. And as Representative Garofalo had asked at the beginning, before we get to member questions and the like, you had asked to defer until after public testimony to offer some additional comments, and then we will go to member questions, which I have Representative Mason and now Representative Freiberg on the list. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to the testifiers. If we could we hear again from City Council member? I don't want to screw our name up, so the member of the Minneapolis City Council who testified.
Ms. Linden, if you would return, Representative Garofalo apparently would like to visit with you on a few matters. Again, if you'd identify yourself for the record, and Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Glidden, and I'm the Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Councilmember Glidden. Thank you for your testimony. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but could you just briefly restate why it is that the Minneapolis City Council passed the ordinance that they did, what the goals of it were?
Ms. Glidden.
Yes. Number one, I had testified that we had hundreds, if not thousands, of people come to us about the need for this type of benefit in the city of Minneapolis. We did research on who was covered by these kinds of benefits already, and we identified that about 41%, which I think is very close to the report that was done about the state of Minnesota on who was covered versus who was not covered by those types of benefits. So about 41% of people in the city, workers in the city of Minneapolis, did not have access to a health care benefit. We also learned that many of the people who were not covered were in jobs such as service industry jobs, where the public health impact then would be compounded. And I did not testify to this, but I will say that, again, we were, as we did our work on this ordinance, we were very concerned with the public health impact of having so many people who had access to the public, sometimes were in service industry jobs where they would be in contact with the public as well as with their coworkers, would not have access to this benefit and then forced to have tough choices.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Councilmember, given those are the input, the reasons for the decision, why did the city of Minneapolis choose to exempt public employees from this?
Thank you very much. And so that was more a decision about legal authority. So we do not, as I understand it, this might be a better question for our city attorney, so I don't misstate something, but we don't have legal authority over other public jurisdictions. And so the city of Minneapolis will be applying this to our own employees, and the park board, which is part of the city of Minneapolis, will be applying this to their employees, but we don't have jurisdiction over Hennepin County employees or the state of Minnesota employees and so forth.
Mr. Chairman?
Was that the question?
And a follow-up question on that. During the testimony and the deliberations at the city council level, was one of the reasons why it was not imposed on the public level, quote, because it costs too much, end quote?
Councilmember Glendon, Representative Groppa, are you asking her to respond to the question? Please. Councilmember Glendon.
I don't remember that, and maybe you want to give me some more context to your comment.
Representative Chair Rockwell.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not really sure that would be necessary at this time, but I just thank you again for taking the time to come down and testify. I do think that if this is if one of the concerns and one of the decisions why the city of Minneapolis chose to exempt the public sector employees from this mandate is cost, a rhetorical question would be if there's concerns in the public sector that it costs this much, well, where's private business supposed to get the money from? But that's more rhetorical in nature, and thank you again for testifying.
And just again to kind of restate what I said, we are applying this to our own jurisdiction. We are applying this to the Park Board, which is part of the city of Minneapolis. We don't have legal jurisdiction over other bodies such as the state of Minnesota, as I understand it from our city attorney.
And, Mr. Chairman, just to reinforce also that point, the ordinance that you wrote applied it to private sector businesses outside of your jurisdiction. You chose to write the ordinance to apply it to private sector businesses that have no nexus or physical location in your. That's why the judge issued a stay on those types of orders. So you did choose to apply it to out of municipal boundary employers who have no presence in your city. That is correct, is it not?
May I answer the question?
Councilmember, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So I appreciate the question, because what we did do is apply this to workers who were working inside of the boundaries of the city of Minneapolis. And we developed a nexus test, as have many other jurisdictions who have adopted similar types of policies, to be able to identify when has someone been working inside the boundaries of the city of Minneapolis long enough that the policy should start to apply to them. And I will just note that this is similar, frankly, to things that happen all across the state of Minnesota with licensing authority, which is a more common type of regulation. We license many businesses in the city of Minneapolis, and I'm assuming other cities do the same type of thing, that physically are not located within the boundaries of the city of Minneapolis, but when they do work inside the boundaries of the city of Minneapolis, we ask that they comply with our licensing rules. And so that's the comparison. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, to the testifiers, to be clear, though, that doesn't apply to government.
Councilmember?
Again, I'm not the lawyer for the city, but my understanding is that we did not have jurisdiction over other public bodies.
Mm-hmm. And thank you again for taking the time to testify.
Thank you.
With that, we will proceed to member questions. Representative Mason, followed by Representative Fiber. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask a question both of Cam Winton and then to Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Winton, if you would return. And members, we will be voting on this today, and there are a number of amendments as well. And to avoid having to come back this evening at 9:30, that is the time that's available in my schedule, after some other commitments, I would like to be able to resolve the matter during our regular committee time. But members, you do have some control over how we will proceed with that. Mr. Whitten, if you are still present, and ask you to come forward. Mr. Whitten, welcome back. Representative Mason.
Thank you. Mr. Whitten, what benefits statewide would you be willing to support?
Mr. Whitten.
To make sure I understand the question, what benefits statewide would the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce be willing to support?
Yes.
Representative Mason, Mr. Whitten, did you need any further clarification?
I think I understand the question now, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Then proceed with your testimony.
Sure, Representative Mason, Mr. Chair. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and our 2,300 member companies support a wide variety of benefits. We offer, member companies offer paid time off, paid sick time, paid family leave, paid maternity leave, paid paternity leave, paid sabbaticals, flexible time off when life's eventualities occur. We support all those benefits when companies and their employees have the flexibility to work them out between themselves in that particular workplace. The concern comes when any level of government tries to mandate that businesses provide precise benefits, because those mandates don't take into account the realities of different types of workplaces. And while it's bad enough when the state tries to mandate particular benefits, it's even worse when municipalities do, because of the patchwork problems that we've spoken about today.
Representative Mason, follow-up?
Just one follow-up. Do you believe that the cost of living and expenses are the same in the metro area as other areas of the state?
Mr. Whitten.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's just the fact that there are different costs of living in different areas of our large state.
So that means there should be some flexibility.
Is that a question to testify, Representative Mason?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. So if I'm understanding you, there should be flexibility.
That is a question you're asking,
right,
to testify. Thank you. Mr. Winton, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mason. The Chamber does believe that there needs to be flexibility between each employer and its employees to work out a set of competitive wages and benefits that work for both the employee and the employer in that market. And when we have the statewide 3.9% unemployment rate that we have right now, there are strong incentives for employers to compete against each other to offer more generous wages and benefits to attract and retain employees. That's exactly what's occurring now. That's exactly the way it should be. And it's because of those dynamics that we see wage growth across the nation higher than it's been in 8 years. And so, yes, flexibility is a very important piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
Representative Mason, you had a question for Chair Garofalo.
Yeah, for Representative Garofalo, essentially the same question, and I do have a follow-up. Do you believe that the cost of living is different in different regions of the state?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, yes, I do, and I see the market as reflecting that right now in the different compensation rates and benefit packages that are offered across our state.
Representative Mason.
Okay. I object to this bill on basic. I'm going to concentrate on two areas. One is, first of all, both Representative Garofalo and I are from Dakota County, and I can tell you homelessness is a big issue there. I can also tell you that people are paying rentals of about $1,000. That's huge. I have also, as a city council member, know what some of these cities are doing, the risks that they are taking, because they are hearing the communities and we're not dealing with it as a state, as somebody has already said. The cities, you know, they are trying to answer the problems that are happening in our communities. They need help. This bill, to me, is ignoring those needs. The other issue that we are not facing as a state has to do with the huge income gap. We know that there are many corporations that are paying outrageous compensations to people. So I guess my thought is, again, I'd rather you scrap this bill. We need to stop catering to ego, paying compensations just for egos, and start working as a state to deal with livable wages for everyone. We don't need people that are working two or three jobs. We don't need people that are working incredible overtime to just make ends meet. And going back to the homeless in Minnesota, in Dakota County, we've had homeless, temporary homeless situations lately. Our churches are working hard on that. But the people that are coming to these homeless shelters, they have jobs. So how about, you know, again, just setting this bill aside, let's solve the problem. of dealing with people as a whole and making sure all of our citizens can deal with safe environments, and let's get everybody working in a healthy way. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
My question is for House Research. This bill has been presented as a bill dealing with labor laws. However, I'm concerned it's written more broadly than that. If you look at line 2.7 of the bill, it says that local governments cannot adopt, enforce, or administer ordinances or policies requiring an employer to provide an employee with a particular benefit, term of employment, or working condition. And it's that working condition phrase that concerns me. Well, many things about this bill concern me, as they do Representative Mason, and she put eloquently. But I'm wondering about that working condition language. It seems, you know, as I said, it's been presented as a bill dealing with labor policies, but there are lots of public health policies or policies related to public welfare or morals that can impact working conditions. So, for example, many communities around the state have adopted smoke-free laws, and part of the reason they do that is to protect the health of their employees. The state has set a floor, but cities and counties are able to go beyond that. Many have done so. Many prohibit the use of electronic cigarettes, for example, in workplaces, which the state law does not do. Examples of those ordinances include the city of Lakeville in Representative Peterson's district, Beltrami County in Representative Bliss's district, Lacaparo County in Representative Swazinski's district, Olmsted County in Representative Quam's district. So I'm just wondering, my first question is if there's a chance that this working condition language could preempt the ability of cities and counties from adopting smoke-free ordinances. And I don't know if Ms. Dyson or Mr. Weeks would be the better person.
Are you probably the candidate we should go to? Mr. Weeks, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Ben Weeks from House Research. Working condition is a term that's not, doesn't have a fixed definition in state law. There are some court cases and other statutes that reference it, but none of them define it with specificity. My understanding in labor law, it's a broad sort of catch-all term that deals with things like whether a person is required to stand up, can sit down, have a mat for their feet, things like that, broadly speaking. Because there's no specific guidance in state law, I can only speculate. It is a broad term. I can see a judge drawing the line that this bill preempts only things directed at workplaces as workplaces. But, again, I'm only speculating. So I would say it is an open question as to whether something like a smoke-free workplace ban would be preempted under the bill.
Representative Piper, quick follow-up.
Yes, I guess the fact that it's an open question suggests that there might be litigation over it, and we don't know how that litigation would be resolved. It could be resolved against the ability of these local governments to do that. Another example I was wondering about would be if a city adopted a state building code, which would apply to many workplaces, or performance standards in the zoning code. These often are designed to protect neighbors. You know, they deal with things like smoke, odor, light, noise, vibration coming from certain businesses, which are also places of work. Being that you said it's working conditions is a broad term, is it possible that a court might hold that ordinances along those lines are preempted as well?
Mr. Weeks.
Mr. Chair, members, with regard to building code specifically, my understanding is a lot of those standards are state standards. But as I said, there's no clear guidance from courts on the issue, so I can't imagine that litigation could arise with regard to a particular ordinance that doesn't fit neatly into one category or the other.
Representative Freiberg.
One last follow-up. Oftentimes cities and counties choose to regulate adult-oriented businesses. There might be inappropriate behavior going on in those sorts of things, which are conducted by the workers in those businesses. If a city decided it needed to regulate the behavior of employees in adult-oriented businesses, could a court possibly determine that that's a regulation dealing with a working condition and hold it preempted?
Mr. Weeks.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I could see a judge going that way.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to start out with an apology. If I would have caught this quicker, I would have talked to you before the committee. It's probably because I've been in this body now for only 3 years, so I've forgotten the 8 years I've spent in the other body, and I know we shouldn't say that. But since this is a bill that directly affects labor law, shouldn't this also be going to civil law? I know that it would go into the judiciary and the other body. So I'm just wondering about the path. I know you moved it to go to ways and means, but I'm wondering if it, since it does deal with labor standards, if it should be going through civil law as well.
Representative Joaquim, are you asking me the question on the bill's path?
Yes.
Representative Joaquim, we were advised that it should go to the Committee on Ways and Means from our committee. And as you well know, having been in this body for 3 years, if there was an error, we will certainly catch that and redirect it to a committee that it needs to go to, should a committee stop have not been made.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we start the amendment process?
I'm ready to go when you are.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A4 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A4 amendment before the committee. Representative Nelson, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, this bill is all about taking away local control from local units of government to where most of them, all of them, are elected officials also. And what this bill, what this amendment does, has to deal with allowing people, cities. Passing ordinances to allow people to take off time to care for dependent children. By not allowing them time off, when they're having to take care of their sick children or dependent children, and having the fear of having to lose their jobs, this can lead to stress on their jobs. It also increases their reliance because they're not getting paid when they're not, when they have to take time off or lose their job when they have to take time off. They end up on state support and wards of the state with food stamp programs and all sorts of other programs that we have in the state for underprivileged people. So I would like to move forward the A4 amendment.
Chair Garofalo, to the A4 amendment as the bill's author.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson. Just to understand right, you would not only allow, but you believe that an employer should be able to discriminate on their compensation based on whether an employee has a child or not?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is what the amendment does.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, do you believe that is legal under federal law?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney, so I know the answer to that question.
Mr. Chairman, members, I would speak against the bill. I don't think members, or the amendment, excuse me, I'm in favor of the bill. But Representative Nelson, I think I understand what you're getting at with this amendment, but I think maybe for just future discussions, you may want to draft the amendment a little bit differently, because it would clearly allow an employee or an employer to base the compensation for an employee exclusively on the basis of whether they have children or not. And that's not something that we allow in this country. But I think I get where the amendment is going, so I understand the motive. Thank you.
All those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment does not pass.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
The A5 amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to call for a roll call on this one.
Roll call being requested. Representative Nelson to the A5 amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, again, with this is about local control in some cities that have deemed that they want to be able to allow people to take time off when they have the birth of a new child, spend time with their children when they're first born. That studies have shown that are great benefits to their individual learning of those children when their parents have taken that time off. And later in life, this helps by decreasing costs again for the state. So I would... Like I said, I'd like support of the A5 amendment.
Chair Garofalo to the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, again, I don't think this was your intent, but what you would do is you would allow employers under this provision to ask employees questions and to obtain information from employees that is explicitly prohibited under current law in Minnesota. Again, I think I know where you're going with this amendment, what you're intending to do. My suggestion would be that perhaps this amendment be, for future consideration, be redrafted. But, again, I would ask members to oppose the vote, to oppose the amendment.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam.
No.
Sandsted.
Yes.
Swinzinski.
No.
Pice.
No.
West.
No.
Jewel Akeem.
Yes.
There being six ayes and ten nays, the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A6 amendment for the committee. Representative Nelson to A6.
And again, all these amendments are about local control. And again, this bill is about local control, stripping the control away from local cities and local elected officials from doing what's best for their citizens. And in this case here, what we're trying to do is allow local cities and local the control over to allow or requiring employers to do business in their cities, to allow people that have time off to deal with terminally ill family members. At that time, it's a very stressful time and for those employees, whether they're at work or they're at home. And the situation here just adds to that stress if they're afraid of having to lose their job when they take time off to deal with these situations. And that's what this amendment does.
Chair Garofalo, the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Nelson, as we've stated in previous comments, this situation would give employers the access, the ability to violate HIPAA standards. And I'm not really sure we want to give employers rights to look into my health care information or my family's health care information. But, again, I think I understand the intent of your amendment, but I would ask members to vote no.
All those in favor,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'd like the roll call.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Sandsted?
Yes.
Swinzinski?
No.
Pice?
No.
West?
No.
Jewel Akeem?
Yes.
To the A6 amendment, there being six ayes and ten nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to present the A7 amendment.
Present or move?
Move, sorry. And ask for a roll call.
Representative Joachim moves the A7 amendment, a roll call being requested to the A7.
And I'm going to kind of wrap in some comments, too, just to save time. I've served on the City Council for 9 years. I wanted to give some public service, but also shape the community that I lived in and love. Folks I served with there were very thoughtful, had their best intentions and interests in the city of Hopkins. They owned businesses in town. They worked in private industry. They were parents. They were grandparents. They were neighbors. They were new residents, lifelong residents. City council members are truly the closest people to the citizens that they serve, as well as school boards, and have the firsthand experiences about what their citizens need. City councils and school boards are unique because they are flexible, they can be nimble, they can address immediate problems their cities have, but they also have a very open, accessible process when it comes to doing ordinances. Posted meetings in communities where people can get to versus driving all the way down here to the Capitol, and we definitely are not nimble here. So they address the needs that their citizens have immediately when they can. It was a wonderful time, those 9 years, but it could also be frustrating when we were faced with implementing state law that someone up here at the Capitol had thought was a good idea, and it was just not practicable on the ground, and when we had to deal with unfunded mandates and a lot of other issues. That made me want to run for the House because I was worried that those voices from our communities were being overlooked up here when laws were being created.
Representative Joachim, I understand that you wanted some comments, but to the A7 amendment.
Yep. And that's getting right to that next.
It looks like when we get to about noon, we'll probably have maybe six or seven amendments for tonight and the vote. So.
Okay, just real quick. So it's pretty clear with this bill that I wasn't wrong in feeling that way, that those voices were getting lost. And I want to make sure that those voices are still being heard and that we give back some semblance of local control, because I also know I can read the writing on the wall. This bill is going really fast, and it's headed to the floor. And so I would like to present the A7 amendment to make sure that we give a little bit of control back to the local government. And this amendment allows for a city to require their employer to provide either paid or unpaid time off when an employee is receiving radiation or chemotherapy or treat cancer for a spouse or a child. Now, my mom was lucky. She found out she had cancer toward the end of her career at the bank. She had a lot of sick time set aside. She had an understanding employer. There's folks out there that aren't as lucky. And when someone is diagnosed with cancer, it can be really devastating. And the last thing they need to think about is whether or not they're going to have a paycheck or whether or not they're going to have a job. And before Representative Garofalo speaks about HIPAA or violations, there are plenty of businesses that require an employee to bring a note from their doctor saying whether or not they can utilize their sick time. So this could be put in place without violating any HIPAA regulations. So I'd like to move once again the A7 amendment.
The A7 amendment, Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the representative for the amendment. I believe I understand the intent of the amendment. However, I would, for the same reasons on the other amendments, I would ask members to vote no.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson? Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
I shall.
Samstead?
Yes.
Brzezinski?
No.
Heiss?
No.
West?
No.
Joachim?
Yes. Yes.
To the A7 amendment, there being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A15 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A15 amendment for the committee. Representative Nelson to the A15 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on that.
Roll call being requested.
And again, Mr. Chair, and this is, again, has to do with vocal control. And again, when people are in the situation where they have to take out time to deal with family members who have Alzheimer's or dementia, these can be very, very stressful times. And local cities sometimes should be able to have the ability to be able to pass these ordinances to do this, get its local control issue, and that's where we're at. And when we talk about, I know in the past couple amendments, Representative Garofalo has mentioned stuff about looking into people's health, but under Family Medical Leave Act, a lot of these issues, they sometimes can get these things taken care of. But as that's, again, this is a local control issue, and if local cities want to be able to do this, we should allow them that.
Representative Garofalo to the A15 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nelson. As I stated in my previous comments, I do not believe this is something that we should be doing at a municipal level and should be statewide, and I would ask members to vote no.
Roll call being Representative Mason.
No, I just wanted something else.
Okay.
Yes.
To the A15 amendment, roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Samstead?
Yes.
Swadzinski?
No.
Heiss?
No.
West?
No.
Joachim?
Yes.
To the A15 amendment, there being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A8 amendment, and this provides paid or unpaid leave for people who have lost a spouse or a child who's died within the past 2 months. And recently in the New York Times, there was an article about the stress that we are placing on our young families. And also recently I was talking to someone who's gone to some of the Scandinavian countries, and it's amazing how much support that they provide families in those countries versus what we're doing here. So again, I'd appreciate your support on A8.
Representative Chair Garofalo to the
A8
amendment. Roll call being requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Mason. Again, I believe I understand the intent of this amendment. With regards to defining within the last 2 months, presumably this would be effective of when this unfortunate incident would happen and a child would die. So I'm not sure why the requirement of the past 2 months would be applied to there, whether it would be – I don't understand how the grief wouldn't be applied to beyond 2 months. But that being said, Representative Mason, I do believe I understand the intent of this amendment. And again, I do not believe that we should be imposing labor ordinances at a municipal level, and would respectfully ask members to vote no.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Flaberg?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
Bobo.
Samstead?
Yes.
Swedzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Yolakim?
Yes.
To the A8 amendment, there being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Yolakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A9 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Representative Yolakim moves the A9 amendment. Roll call being requested. To the amendment, Representative Yolakim.
As been noted here today, city councils and school boards and local municipalities are charged with maintaining the health and safety of their cities. And this amendment speaks directly to that. I myself have been a waitress and have all the way through college to pay for school, later on in life to supplement our family's budget. And there were times where, as one of the testifiers said, when you're choosing between a paycheck and whether or not you're going to go to work with a cold or a flu and a communicable disease, you go to work. And we need to make sure that cities and local municipalities can have the control to keep their citizens safe. And this would be one way to do it, with this amendment that would allow cities to mandate employers to do paid or unpaid, their choice, time to employees that have been diagnosed with a debilitating disease for which a medical doctor has, where a medical doctor has determined the individual must reduce the work schedule on employees. So this one actually would be for those who, let's say, are on bed rest or have a concussion, which happens that they have to reduce their hours because they can't have the screen time, or they've been diagnosed with pneumonia and need time off, or asthma, or, as one testifier said here today, shingles. Debilitating diseases can be horrible for folks. They can be short-term, they can be long-term, but there are times when you need that extra hours off of work to make sure that you can get healthy and come back and be a productive employee. So this would allow cities to apply that ordinance, and I'm sorry I started to speak to the wrong amendment, but this is the A9 one. Thank you.
To the author of the A9 amendment, Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Representative, just one correction. You mentioned both paid and unpaid matters. It should be noted that under federal law, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as FMLA, employers are prohibited from firing or terminating employees based on a health condition. That being said, the dispute would be over whether there should be paid compensation or not the unpaid issue. And with regards to that, again, I do not believe it's something that should be done at a municipal level. And I believe I understand the author's intent in the amendment, and I would ask members to vote no.
A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll on the A9 amendment.
O'Driscoll.
No.
Pugh.
No.
Bliss.
No.
Fenton.
No.
Flaberg.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Mason.
Yes.
Nash.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Quam.
No.
Samstead.
Yes.
Swedzinski.
No.
Tice.
No.
West.
No.
Yolakim.
Yes.
To the A9 amendment, there being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Yolakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A16 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Representative Yolakim moves the A16 amendment for the committee and requests a roll call. To the A16 amendment, Representative Yolakim.
And this time I will actually speak to the correct amendment. So this is the amendment that would allow cities to really protect their citizens from health, with their health and safety, and make sure that folks that handle food as part of their job duties of an employer, those who have been diagnosed by a medical professional as having a contagious disease, that they can receive paid or unpaid sick time from their employers.
Thank you, sweetheart.
And once again, like I said, this is really goes to our service industry in restaurants and folks that are handling food. And I would like to see cities be able to make sure that their citizens stay safe and healthy. Thank you.
To the bill author, Chair Garofalo, on the A16 amendment.
Mr. Chairman and to the representative, as with the previous amendment, the Federal Medical Leave Act does cover this in the case of unpaid absences. It's against federal law to terminate or dismiss an employee with regards to those conditions. And again, on the matter of paid leave, this is something that I do not believe should be done at a municipal ordinance level and would ask members to vote no.
There being a roll call requested on the A16 amendment, the clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Flaberg?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
Me.
Sandsted?
Yes.
Swidzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Urakim?
Yes.
To the A16 amendment, there being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move A10, and again, this provides paid or unpaid sick leave for an employee who must remain at home to care for a spouse, child, or parent who's been diagnosed with an illness for which a medical doctor has determined the individual must have full-time assistance or a caretaker.
To the A10 amendment, the bill author, Chair Graffel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, again, unpaid leave is currently covered through the Family Medical Leave Act. It is against federal law to not do that. With regards to the paid leave, I do believe that it's best that we do this on a uniform basis and not allow municipal ordinances, and ask members to vote no.
There being a roll call requested, all those in favor signify by saying aye. There was no roll call, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment does not prevail. Representative Freiberg.
I'd like to offer the A11 amendment.
Representative Freiberg offers the A11 amendment to the A11 amendment, Representative Freiberg.
This amendment would allow cities and counties to adopt ordinances requiring paid or unpaid sick time to an employee who's been determined to have a disability of at least 70% and is a veteran, with the adjudication by the Veterans Administration. I'd encourage your support.
To the bill author, Chair Garofalo, on the A11 amendment.
Again, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Freiberg, the Family Medical Leave Act calls out specific provisions with regards to the disabled as well as veterans who have served our country. The question is going to be on the matter of paid leave, which I've answered that question already and would respectfully ask members to vote no.
All those in favor of the A11 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Mason.
Okay, I'd like to move A12. And this is one
Mason
where
moves the A12 amendment.
This one is, again, providing paid or unpaid sick leave for an employee who is a veteran and has been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorders for experience that occurred while on active military duty. And this one, I think, we're seeing more and more of. So, again, I'd appreciate your support.
Chair Garofalo, to the A12 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this is covered. The unpaid portion is covered under the Family Medical Leave Act under current federal law, and I am opposed to local municipal ordinances with regards to labor matters and would ask for a no vote.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments today? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have an amendment, but I have just a comment because I just looked up the Family Medical Leave Act, and that applies only to employees that have been at a business for at least 12 months. So it doesn't cover everybody, Representative Garofalo. Just wanted to point that out.
Are there any other amendments being offered today? Chair Garofalo, we will give you the final word on the bill before we vote today. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. First of all, I just want to thank members for the good deliberations and discussions on this bill. Also, I want to thank members of both sides of the aisle who have chosen to co-respond. Representative O'Driscoll, you want a roll call? Okay.
No.
Okay.
Wait, yes.
Should
it hasn't been a roll call yet.
Roll call being requested.
Wait until he's finished.
Okay, sorry. So I want to thank members of both sides of the aisle who have supported this bill and have co-sponsored it. As with any provision this year, the only way this will become law is if there is bipartisan agreement where the legislature and the executive branch can reach compromises. And so in the event that we're unable to do that, we're going to end up with a local patchwork of labor ordinances across our state. And I would just highlight to members that this may not cut the way you think it does. If you give local municipalities the ability to define their own local labor ordinances, that means they can do stuff that maybe is not progressive or maybe not, in your view, something that you support. And my prediction would be that, especially in a state where we have over 80 cities with initiative and referendum, we're going to have so many efforts at the local level and local labor laws, very divisive issues, that within a year, my friend Representative Nelson will be back here begging for us to pass this bill. So with that, I want to thank members for the deliberation and look forward to the conversation going forward and ask for your yes vote.
I renew my motion that House File 600 be re-referred to the committee on Ways and Means, a roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Pugh.
Yes.
Bliss.
Yes.
Fenton.
Yes.
Freiberg.
No.
Mason.
No.
Lee.
No.
Nash.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Quam.
C.
Sandstead.
No.
Brzezinski.
Yep.
Tice.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Buell Joaquin.
No.
There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is re-referred to the committee. It will be re-referred to the committee on Ways and Means. With that, no other business before the committee. We are.